With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. We have two more segments with Dr. Jerry Punch as he joins us for his weekly visit. Doc, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Shop local, shop New Balance Knoxville right there in the Suburban Shopping Center, right off of Kingston Pike, just west of Westtown Mall. And he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. If you have a question or comment for Doc, 865-656-9900. That's 865-656-9900. 9900. Let's say hello to Randy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Randy.
Hello. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing fine. Hey, Dr. Punch, I've got a couple questions and comments real quick. Did you go to Ron Rice's funeral a few months back?
I did not go to the funeral. No.
The Hawaiian Tropic car owner, and of course he owned Hawaiian Tropic and was a UT grad. I didn't know if you went or not.
No, but, I did not go.
Okay, I knew you were a friend of his. I didn't know if you went or not. But anyhow, another question. I need confirmation on this. The J-turn that a lot of stunt car drivers use in movies, and then that Rockford used on the Rockford Files TV show, and people use Secret Service and people in law enforcement use it. I heard that Junior Johnson invented that back when he was running from law enforcement. It was called the bootlegger slide or bootlegger's turn, where you can make a quick 180 and get away instead of having to stop, turn, you know, and keep turning and all that. He was so good at that I understand he was the creator of the J-turn, which has no value in NASCAR. But is that true, that Junior Johnson was the creator of the J-turn?
I spent a lot of time around Junior and at his home and in and around Rhonda, North Carolina, but I never asked him that question. My guess is from seeing the roads that I grew up on there in that area that had left and right turns, and that probably there were many others who used the J-turn before he did, because a lot of the guys up there were ran some shine and the cars and were being chased by people who didn't want them to do that. But it would not surprise me. Junior had incredible car control and his ability. But, you know, they made lots of movies up there. Back in the days, they made lots of black and white racing movies before there was color. Remember, they made a Rory Calhoun movie up there, Thunder in the Carolinas. You know, but it would not surprise me. The Robert Mitchum, Thunder Road, Thunder Road was made up in that area. It wouldn't surprise me if Junior was a part of developing that turn. We knew it in contemporary fashions, as, you know, Joey Chitwood used it in some of his thrill shows.
Yeah, it takes incredible skill to do that. Law enforcement learn it, and Secret Service and federal agents learn it. And then you got a guy like Junior that invented that. He was such an incredible driver. I think the old timers like Richard Petty and Junior had maybe not the reflexes these younger guys have, but I think their skill and talent on the track was a lot better than some of these young drivers. What do you think?
Well, I think that you remember they didn't have air conditioning. They didn't have ventilation in the cars. They didn't have a lot of them. Some of those guys were bouncing around on seats that still had coil springs in them with one seat belt, nothing else, no shoulder protection, no shoulder harnesses, no way to hold your head up. These guys were physical. I mean, literally, back in those days, you tried to run Bristol, you had to run 500 laps of Bristol. Some of these guys, it was hard to hold your head up, but they did it because they didn't have anything. The helmets were heavy. They're not as light as they are now. You didn't have any way to brace your head, neck, you know, with a brace. You had to sit there and hold your head up until you couldn't anymore. Richard Petty actually took a hook, a little J hook, and screwed it into the roof of his car from inside, and then hooked his helmet to it so his helmet wouldn't fall over at Bristol. The only problem was if you had to get out in a hurry, your helmet's hooked to the roof. You had to take the helmet off and then climb out. But, yeah, those guys back in those days were physical. Drove with broken fingers, broken ribs, shoulders, and they still drove. They didn't get out and get a relief driver or whatever. They just got in the car and drove.
Doc, your thoughts on Bubba Wallace signing an extension with the Michael Jordan, Denny Hamlin team?
Well, it's a good situation for Bubba and for that team, for lots of reasons. Obviously, diversity, You know, that's, you know, he's done so much for being able to open that door in so many ways in NASCAR, and for that team with Michael coming in, sponsorships coming on board. Bubba has run well. The team is because they've been sort of a satellite of Joe Gibbs Racing. They have good equipment, great engineering input from Toyota and Joe Gibbs. And so, you know, it's a good situation for him and good for that whole team to be able to know. Denny Hamlin, you know, who's a co-owner as well, to know that Bubba's going to be around and can continue to grow as a driver. He's just got to be a little less hard on himself when he finishes second and realize that, hey, only one person's going to win, and there's 40 others that don't. So you're one of them.
He's not made the playoffs yet in his career, but he's pretty close right now. Does he have to win a race to crack into the playoffs?
Yeah, he'll have to win a race, you know, probably, you know, Martin Truex or any of those guys. You know, Blaney's the guy right now that has a 26-point lead, you know, Ryan Blaney, and he's the only non-winner in the playoffs right now. However, they go to Watkins Glen this week, is where I'll be this weekend. I'll be in New York on Friday and Saturday. But I mean, they go to Watkins Glen, so anything can happen on a road course. Then they go to Daytona. So, and remember that the Bubba Wallace cars and teams, they run really well. Bubba's a very good in the draft at Daytona, so they're would not surprise me to see him be a major factor at Daytona to possibly get that win. And wouldn't that be in dramatic fashion? Final race of the regular season, final laps, and he somehow makes it in the playoffs.
Let's get a call from Jerry. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, guys.
Hey,
guy. Yeah, I'm going to give you all a quiz here, see if you want to play, if you're interested. But
not, but go ahead.
A couple of schools of Gibbs give their coaches some good contracts. Cause they know when Saban leaves that Alabama's going to pull up in an armored car and say, there it is. Just take whatever you want. But if Saban did decide that he had an ingrown toenail or something and couldn't coach anymore, what do you think Alabama's list would look like? And who do you think they might wind up with?
Rich Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
That's
right. It's destiny.
Yeah. He's waited long enough.
Well, I can only hope they would go get Jeremy Pruitt. I don't know. Dabo Sweeney, Alec played there, you know, from Alabama, although I don't know why in the world Dabo would ever want to, you know, where he is in the ACC, what he's got rolling at Clemson. You know, and do you really want it to, who in their right mind, obviously, that has a fairly successful coaching stint going, wants to be the guy to follow Nick Saban? I mean, you want to be the guy to follow Vince Lombardi, or, you know, it's how do you do that? I mean, so it's going to be a tough one. But then again, maybe some, you know, an Alabama's going to want maybe a proven name, or do they want one of their own? Guys, do you think they go after a proven head coach that's already winning at the elite level? Or do they try to get someone who's been in his system and is an Alabama blue blood, you know, from with Crimson Tide, Crimson Tide background?
I think they want to get the best coach out there that's a proven winner. But, Doc, I think those coaches are extremely hard to pry away from where they are.
Yeah, and do you think they would look at Doc as somebody who coached at Alabama with Nick Saban as an Alabama guy? Or would it have to be somebody who indeed played for the Crimson Tide in your mind? I think they would give it kind of the extended family tree.
I do, too. I think that someone that knows his system, knows how he did it, has seen how the sausage is made, understands what he did, how he recruited, how he ran the program, and all the, you know, and Nick Saban, unlike a lot of head coaches that have been as successful, no one's been as successful in this current era as he has, but would just walk around and watch practice. He's actively involved. He's vocal in every drill and hands-on. So I think that's what you have to be, and that's what they would look for.
Maybe Mark Stoops so he can go to a football school.
That's a good one. I don't think there's any question that Alabama would certainly have the ability to knock on anyone's door, make any call, and – I will, though, be very interested to see what that list looks like, Jimmy, when that time finally arrives as to exactly who they would have as their favorite in terms of if they could have anybody to fill those shoes, those massive shoes that are once at some point going to be vacant, who that top prospect or candidate would be.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the tree and those that have had success, it's Jimbo Fisher. I'm not sure how popular he'd be right now.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, he's had one great year there. Steve Sarkisian, if he does well at Texas, would they look in that direction? Bill O'Brien's on the staff right now, but I'm not sure how they feel about him. Dabo Swinney's been mentioned, but Doc, I agree with you. You might as well stay at Clemson. I think you'd be crazy to go to Alabama. How about Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State? I'm looking at guys that have had success at a relatively high level that might be. I mean, Ryan Day's not leaving Ohio State, right?
Right.
And Lincoln Riley's not leaving USC after going over there, right?
Correct.
So I think that narrows the pool a little bit about coaches winning at a high level that you could attract.
You got Clemson, you got Georgia. Both have two head coaches that have to Alabama ties, Saban ties, I should say. Mm-hmm. They're not. I can't imagine they're going anywhere. Of that group, the only guy I think because we've seen it happen before, unfortunately, that would possibly make a move, in my opinion, would be Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. You know, we've seen Ole Miss coaches leaving before and go from Ole Miss to Auburn. Could we see an Ole Miss coach leave and go from Ole Miss to Alabama? Tommy Tuberville did it and went to Auburn from Ole Miss. And not that Ole Miss is a stepping stone. It's a great school and a great place to live in Oxford, Mississippi. But, you know, if you're Lane Kiffin and you run the kind of offense and can get the kind of players they can get at Alabama, you know, it's pretty tough to go there and think you can't win. Plus, you got to have enough confidence in your ability. And Lane Kiffin doesn't lack for confidence. Okay. You know, so I think he would he'd feel good about taking that shot.
I wonder if he ruffled too many feathers at Alabama, got fired before national championship game. That could be a potential issue.
Yeah, it could be, but they want to win.
Yeah, that's true.
Very interesting question, Jerry. For us, it's a final segment with Dr. Jerry Punch as he joins us for his weekly visit. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, right there in the Suburban Shopping Center, just west of Westtown Mall, right off of Kingston Pike. And, of course, Doc joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. It's Cody who joins us next. Hello, Cody. How are you?
I'm doing fine, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Doing well. Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to comment before I ask my question on that last segment there about Alabama. One, I would be thrilled to watch them implode once Nick Saban leaves. But two, with Kirby Smart at Georgia kind of giving a run for it, I can't see that kind of dominance happening in college football again, even at Alabama after Saban leaves. That's my statement on that. Dr. Punch, my question is, I guess I'm thinking, I'm not a very big NASCAR fan, don't follow it that much, but I know back when I was younger, wasn't Dale Earnhardt at the Daytona 500 and what unfolded with his death. Is there another tragedy that televised or that big that's happened in a sporting event that you guys, any of you three, can remember or recall?
Wow.
Well, I mean, not that big. Obviously, Dan Weldon, the IndyCar driver who was killed, you know, on live television at Las Vegas when his car got tangled with others. He got airborne into the fence. He wasn't nearly as well known. He was a wonderful, two-time Indy 500 winner, just an incredible person. I can't think of, obviously, I mean, they're a terrible tragedy. Any loss of life is a tragedy. The space shuttle that everybody was watching when it exploded, I was in Florida at the time, and I was standing outside the hospital watching the space shuttle go up and when that occurred. So everybody knows where they were, you know in sports, I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, the JFK situation that occurred. But in sports, I don't know. Guys, in auto racing, I've seen some horrific injuries, and obviously the Earnhardt situation is the one that is the most painful to me because of my friendship and relationship with him for so many years. You think of others, guys?
Well, I'll say this. When it comes to something that just really impacted the sport, Thurman Munson, when he passed away mid-season with the New York Yankees when he was killed in the plane crash, that was something that really, you know, cast a pall over the sport. And but I can't think, Jimmy, of another sport where they lost their iconic, their essentially the face of their sport. There certainly have been injuries, but I don't think anything to the degree of what NASCAR faced that day when Dale Sr. died.
Well, and Cody said on TV.
Yeah.
And I just can't remember another one like that. I remember the old clip that we've seen of the thrill of victory, agony of defeat on Wide World of Sports where the skier flies off the slope, but he didn't die. So I don't remember another one that was televised in sports that compares to Dale Earnhardt. I'm kind of like Doc. There have been others that have occurred, but not in sports, not on TV that I can think of.
What I was wondering too, I know, like you said, there's other events that have happened, but as far as a sporting event happening at mm-hmm. that time, I was just curious about that. Because like I said, I don't follow NASCAR that much. I knew there was probably some bad injuries in that, and I didn't think about IndyCar, but that was on my mind. That's why I was going to ask you guys that.
Hmm. Yep. Cody, we sure do appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Doc, we've talked a little bit about with Tennessee and so forth. They've had scrimmages. They play September the 1st. The over-under seems to be 8.5 on win totals for Tennessee. Do you have any projection right now on what you think where Tennessee will land? Over 8.5 or under 8.5?
Well, I'm the eternal optimist, and I love, you know, and I really am I like what Josh Heupel has done. I love the coaching staff, Rich Rodriguez. I mean, I think there's a lot of people down there that are excited to be able to showcase how far the program has come in a year since Heupel got here, and he had a short off season last year to try to get some things done. Here again, I think that game two at Pittsburgh is important for lots of reasons, but, you know, I think it's going to be a heck of a contest, and especially if Tennessee can just get comfortable and play well within themselves and get comfortable against Ball State, knowing Pitt has to play arch rival West Virginia that same night, you know, in a sellout crowd with lots of emotion on the line. So, I think that, but if I were to guess, I would go over. I would say, I hate saying this out loud, but I think I could see Tennessee starting 4-0, LSU, Alabama. I mean, I think there's a tremendous potential for Tennessee to be very, very good this year, and surprise a lot of people on both sides of the ball. I think you got to keep a quarterback healthy. You got to stay fairly healthy up front, and you got to be physical enough up front defensively that you can move. And the linebackers have to show some mobility and tenacity that we didn't exactly see on a regular basis last year as far as stopping the run.
Hey, Doc, I want to get your take on this. College basketball lost an iconic figure in Pete Carrell at Princeton. He was 92 years old. He ran that Princeton offense, the 13 Ivy League titles. He almost upset number one ranked Georgetown in 1989 with that offense. I think he broke. They almost beat Arkansas. He did beat UCLA. Just your thoughts on Pete Carrell as a coach?
Just an icon, just a one of a kind. He taught discipline, personal discipline on the court, the game. It was all about the system. You play as a teammate, you're unselfish, and you have to be unselfish in that system because if you don't, if you try to play as individuals, you'll get beaten by 20 points. But his system worked. It was proven time and again. And the thing is, everybody can tell you all the people they beat on the floor, but the people inside that program will tell you that he touched many, many more lives off the playing court, but by what he did for those kids that played for him. And obviously it was a huge loss, but will be remembered for a long time for his contributions to college basketball.
Doc, as you mentioned, you're going to be heading to Watkins Glen. What's it going to be like for you to be on hand?
Well, I'm actually going to go up there. I'm going to MC. They have a Hall of Fame up there in New York that is NASCAR related, and I go up there intermittently. I did the induction for Roger Penske. I did the induction 1 year for Mario Andretti for the France family, and this year we are doing the induction for Mike Helton, longtime NASCAR president, who grew up on the Virginia side of Bristol, right across the city line there, downtown Bristol, on Virginia, and went to school there in Virginia, and has done so much for NASCAR as a vice president and a president and chairman of the board, and now he is a chairman retired. He's being inducted in the Hall of Fame, and they asked me if I'd come up and do the induction, so I will be able to go up there and see a lot of my buddies in the Cup Series and do that induction on Friday night and be there with Mike, and so I'm excited about being a part of that program and being able to get back to Watkins Glen.
Wow, that's quite an honor. So, well, safe travels. Hope everything goes fantastically, and we look forward to catching up with you and hearing all about it next Monday.
We'll talk to you on Monday, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Dr. Jerry Punch joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. His appearance brought to you each week by our friends at New Balance Knoxville.
Let's hear now from Josh Heupel. Tennessee's head coach met with the media Sunday morning. It was after Tennessee's second scrimmage of the season. It was held at Neyland Stadium. Heupel had an opening statement. Then he took questions. Here are comments from Josh Heupel.
Hey, great day. Always good to get inside of the stadium here. And first of all, it looks great. But big day for our players and our staff. Great day too. We had a bunch of families that were here to share in the scrimmage and got an opportunity to spend some time with the kids here this afternoon too before we come back in the building this evening. I'm excited about them, getting a chance for myself and our staff to see them as well. So I thought there were a bunch of positives today in the scrimmage. I thought played cleaner, both sides of the football, executed. Thought just, you know, alignment, assignment, eyes on keys, being lined up, ready to go on the defensive side of the football, tackling in space. Thought we did a much better job in those areas than we did in the first scrimmage. And offensively, at times, we're efficient and played with great pace and handled the communication side of it at a really high level, too. So a bunch of positives. I know there will be a bunch of things that we need to clean up, too, as we go back and watch the tape this afternoon.
Josh, a couple things. How do you see the left tackle battle going right now?
Yeah, it's been back and forth a little bit through training camp. You guys have heard me say this. At the end of the day, we're going to need both of them, all of them. You experienced last year injuries, and that's true at the tackle spot. It's true on all five spots. Those guys are continuing to compete. That's not going to stop after today. That will happen all the way up until kickoff. Anticipate both of them playing during the course of the football game. Throughout the season and certainly in week one, who gets a majority of that or what the percentage breakdown is, we'll continue to evaluate as we go through. Both of them have made a bunch of progress from spring ball and really since the beginning of training camp in understanding what we're doing offensively. In the run game, playing with better pad level, being able to create some movement up front. Both of them take major strides in the pass pro side of it too. So. I feel like those guys are continuing to progress as they should.
Are they playing well enough to where you think Darnell Wright will stay at right tackle?
Yeah, at this point, we plan to keep Darnell at the right side.
Yeah, at running back, assuming Jalen is ready to go when the season gets here healthy, would you go three deep? Would you go four deep? You've got two freshmen there that I'm sure both played well. How deep would you go at running back?
Times we played had to play five last year, right? So everybody's got to be ready to play. As we continue here on the back half of training camp and even before we get to game week and game week itself, those guys proving that we can trust them. And that's certainly with the ball in their hands, taking care of the football. It's in understanding what we're doing offensively and delivering blocks and hitting the right holes. A big part of it is understanding pass pro, too. The two young guys in particular, I think, have grown throughout the course of training camp, where their eyes are at and understanding protections and being able to handle the football game as it truly gets played out in a live situation. We're going to need a bunch of guys at that position. It's just the nature of football. It's the nature of that position. It's the nature of playing inside of this league, an extremely physical league.
Coach, you talk about trust for the running backs. When you talk about depth at wide receiver, like you have a handle on how many of those guys you trust in a game yet?
Not yet. I thought there were some real positive things today. Brew McCoy did some really good things out there inside of the stadium. I thought he handled and operated really well. Was physical with the ball in his hands. Jimmy Holiday made some plays today, some competitive catches, and then run after the catch. Walker Merrill's a guy that's had a really good training camp, much better football player and understanding of what we're doing, from where we ended spring ball. I think he's made strides, and he's done that offensively. He's done it on the special teams side of it, too. So there's still a ton of competition. We've had a couple guys that, have missed a day or two here and there through training camp. This next block will be important to see those guys function and operate and handle the totality of what we're doing offensively and ultimately prove that they deserve to be on the football field and play. It's a Jimmy Callaway, it's Squirrel, in particular those two guys.
Josh, the growth of Joe Milton over the offseason, how have you seen that translate to fall camp, and what have you thought of his first two scrimmages?
Through practices, he's been a better decision maker, better command of what we're doing offensively, strides that you would hope and think he needs to take and is capable of. He's taken better care of the football. A lot of things that we've asked from him just growing up and becoming the mature person and player that we need inside of that room and in that position inside of this program. He's taken some of those strides. There's a bunch left out there for him. You guys know he has his arm talent to make some really special throws. But I think in the two scrimmages, he's had really good command and presence in what we've done.
Yeah, Josh, not just today, I know you haven't seen the tape, but what's your assessment of your linebacker group and how much Juwan Mitchell's grown from where he was and Jeremy and that group? And then secondly, do you have an update on Brew McCoy, and are you starting to get antsy with that one, with the window there?
Don't have an update on Brew. The linebacker position, we are deeper because of young guys that we've added inside of our program and the health of Juwan and the continued development of the guys that were playing last year makes that unit a deeper unit. In year two, like a lot of our positions, I do think they have a better understanding of what we're doing defensively. We've been better in our gap fits here, the last four-day block. In particular, I thought the one defense today, for the most part, did a really good job. I think they've tackled well. That second level has tackled well here as of late. Juwan being back adds experience, adds playmaking ability. Jeremy's continued to grow. We've talked about that. Beasley and Page, those guys have taken major strides in the offseason too, and they've shown that through a majority of training camp.
Josh, a couple of things. I wondered if you had an update on Kamal Haddon's status, when you think he might be able to get back, and also just the cornerback situation in general with all those guys kind of getting back except for Haddon. How's that competition going, and what's the comfort level there?
Yeah, I want to see the tape today for me to make a comment on, how they played today. Overall, I think, they've done a better job of, the 50-50 balls down the football field, being calm, not panicking, playing the football in the wide receiver. They've done a good job in the fits and some of our pressures and things that we've done. Kamal, I anticipate being able to get some reps here over the next four-day block. It'll be good to see him back on the field for us. He's handled himself in a really mature way while he's been nicked up and hasn't been able to be on the field. Been purposeful in the way he's approached meetings, practice, essentially has a plan of coaching guys up during the course of the practice. So I think his engagement has allowed him to continue to grow. Obviously, you want those real reps and anticipate being able to get those this next block with him. Warren Burrell's had a really steady, good camp. Rucker coming back healthy. I feel like he's playing his best football right now as well. There's a ton of competition right there at that position. And that's, some young guys that have gotten here, guys that have, been around this program for a couple of years too. So excited to see that continue to play out. And obviously I want to see the tape today from those guys too.
Comments from Jice Heupel, Tennessee head coach. And certainly the secondary to me, I think that's the biggest concern on this football team. If they can figure that out, then I think they've got a chance defensively to be a better team than a year ago. If they don't, we may see more of the same.
Yep. And if folks did not hear, Jimmy, Tennessee has added to its class of 23 and noteworthy in the secondary.
Yes, they got a cornerback named Ricky Gibson. He's out of Trustville, Alabama. Georgia wanted him. So did Arkansas and Penn State. And then they got another cornerback, Jordan Matthews, out of Baton Rouge. Texas was right in the thick of it for him. And while I don't know that either one would rate it that high, the fact that big-time programs wanted him tells me they must be pretty good prospects. Tennessee now with 21 commitments, and they've got now three cornerbacks and two safeties, if I recall correctly, with the incoming class.
With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson.
As LSU tries to rebound from a couple of bad years, Brian Kelly has been dealt perhaps a bit of a blow. LSU quarterback Miles Brennan, who was a starter at the beginning of the 2020 season, has suffered two season-ending injuries. He's giving up football, so he's no longer a part of it. Now it's Jaden Daniels, a transfer from Arizona State, or Garrett Nussmeier, and I would be shocked if Daniels doesn't win the job. So LSU is down one quarterback who I thought had a chance to win the job. Notre Dame has named a starting quarterback, Tyler Buckner. He is a sophomore, so he has stepped in to be the starter. We'll see how he performs. Also, as far as tennis over the weekend, Simona Halep won in Toronto. Along the way, she beat Coco Gauff, and then she won in the final in three sets. And then Pablo Busta also won in Toronto. Next up is the Southern and Western Tournament in Cincinnati, and Serena Williams is playing there. She was going to play Monday, but they moved it to Tuesday, and she's supposed to play the defending U.S. Open champion, Emma Raducanu. So we'll see how Serena Williams fares in that contest. Also, Deshaun Watson over the, I guess it was Friday evening maybe, finally apologized to the women that he may have impacted, he said. It's the first time he made any apologize. Up until now, John, he has indicated, I didn't do anything wrong, I maintain my innocence, but now he's finally apologized to them. I wonder if that has any impact on the second arbitrator's decision on the NFL appeal regarding Watson's six-game suspension.
I certainly think that's the hope. It is interesting that this is the time. It's not hat in hand when you've settled with all but one of those that have made allegations and or charges. And it's not as though this was something that came after the first bit of punishment was handed down and agreed to by the mediator. So I do think that this is with the hope that by if I show that I am repentant, that maybe it won't be a full season that he'll lose. But I just think that this is something, and I understand that you have to kind of walk a specific path when there is the potential, and there's still the potential for civil suits. Yes. But when you've settled with so many, that kind of knocks all that down. But there, it's not like he's completely out of the woods just yet. But I just believe that this is something that should have come on a long time ago, simply for the fact that there were so many that said he did something wrong.
I wonder if he and his attorney decided he is not going to apologize until after the majority of these are settled. There's one other civil suit out there that could be going forward, and that would be it. So a couple of other notes. Jason Garrett, former Dallas Cowboys head coach, is going to be the color analyst for Notre Dame football games this fall on NBC. He and Jack Hollingsworth, the son of Chris Hollingsworth, replaced Mike Tirico and Drew Brees for the Notre Dame games on NBC. Texas Rangers have fired Chris Woodard, the manager who did not have a very good start this year. They've got a bad record.
Or a good middle.
Yeah. Start, middle, or end. So, yeah. Adios, kazoos for you. Let's see. Exhibition game. Dallas Cowboys with 17 penalties. Wow. They had 14 in a playoff loss to San Francisco.
They had 10 more points. Excuse me. They had 10 more penalties than they had points in their loss to Denver.
In the last 2 years, Dallas leads the NFL with 266 penalties. Now, when you say, oh, boy, you can't win doing that, well, the Bills had 261. That's second. The Raiders, 260, and they made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And Arizona had 260. So I don't know if there's always a correlation between penalties, but that is a complete lack of discipline. Jarrett Garantano, former Tennessee quarterback for Arizona, 7 of 10 and threw a 5-yard touchdown pass as Arizona defeated Cincinnati. He rolled out to the left. It was a nice throw. So Garantano has a touchdown pass in the preseason for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and best of luck to him, and good for him that he didn't check off at the line and try and sneak it in himself.
It was a good call on his part.
Was a good call. But again, wishing him the best as he tries to make the Cardinals. We'll get a break. Hour number three of Sports Talk is coming up. And to start it off with us, Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. He joins us next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.